People, it's supposed to say you are tuning in for the culture podcast. Let me take a minute before you smell my breath on the podcast.
For the culture.
Back at it again, it's for the culture podcast. You got me, Exotic Rosé, Lisa Marie, and Clark Stephan with me. And we have a special guest here today, Shay Ryan Douglas.
Yeah, well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate you having me on the show here and have a conversation, chat about a bit about the culture and share a little bit of insight from Australia here. And yeah, real honor to be here.
It's like 10 o'clock right now, 10, 12, something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Saturday morning, 10 a.m.
Wow, it's already Saturday.
Yeah.
So go ahead and give us a little background information. I know you're from Australia, but I guess you got I don't know if you want to call it a scholarship to come play football down here. And then you ended up in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. So once I finished high school, I was 17 years old and I was really fortunate. I was super passionate about playing soccer, as you call it in the States. We call it football. But I decided to, follow that passion and go and play in the States and was offered a scholarship at a university in Milwaukee. In Wisconsin, and never looked back really. I went over there, said goodbye to all my friends and my family and everything that I knew here in Australia and decided to embark on a bit of a new life adventure. And a lot of people at first, I was kind of like expecting it to be very similar to Australian culture because, I mean, we watch a lot of American TV, we watch a lot of American movies, and I had a pretty good insight, but I was culture shocked, you know, after the first month living in Wisconsin. One, the weather started to get really cold and I'm from a tropical part of Australia. So I was battling with the weather and even a lot of like subtle differences in the way that we communicate. And I was a little bit kind of amazed at how similar it was to some of the movies that I had been so familiar with. And it was a bit strange for me because I thought that was just in the movies. And I guess there are stereotypes for a reason, but it was also interesting to get to know the people on a deeper level. And everyone that I came across in the States were really, really open, really warm and really welcoming to me. So they made it a really smooth little process to find my feet in a new place. And I began to really enjoy it living in Wisconsin and found and connected with some really good people. And I ended up staying for 4.5 years. So I lived up in the Midwest region mostly. I got to travel quite a lot and would spend the summers over there and would probably go back once or twice every couple of years to see my family in Christmas. But that was a whole new experience living in the United States. And I learned a lot about myself. I was extremely young age and I kind of went off on some wild paths, which led me to go down a spring break one summer down in Florida where you guys
Before we get there.
Okay.
I know that whole story, but before we get there, I heard that you had a car called Green Hornet with a hole in the ground too when you was in college.
That's it, man. You know it. Yeah. So my first, me and my buddy, he's from the UK, he's English. And, I was on a scholarship, so I wasn't earning any money and I was just living off, the cafeteria food and living in the dorms and stuff. And we decided to scratch around what money we had in our bank accounts and buy a car. And I think we spent maybe like $700. And it was this little beat up green car that we called the Green Hornet. And it was a pretty beat up little car, but it served its purpose. It got us from A to B. You know, we were able to get down to the bars and have a drink in the evening or go down to the soccer fields and do some extra training. And it served its purpose, but it was a little bit shaky at times and probably very unsafe.
My first car was a 1994 Honda Civic, the same one that was in Fast and Furious.
And oh wow.
I'm surprised that even got to where all those places I went to. I used to have my girl in the car and it should be like you could feel the vibration, the rocks. Like I know what you're talking about. I think we all been through with our first car. It was pretty crazy. It's my bad, Clark. You had a Mercedes, your first car. Sorry, an Audi.
It was a Beamer. No, but anyway.
Nice.
Yeah, we don't have the opportunities like you. So you went to that, and then you ended up in spring break, and You actually was on a documentary on Netflix.
Yes, I saw you.
I literally watched it because of you. I did, like, I seen it, but I never really paid attention or clicked on it. I didn't understand it. But after watching it, I see the purpose of the whole documentary, and I actually liked it. And I actually like that you allowed yourself to be shown like that in that view, because you're actually a changed person now. And go ahead and give us a little background on how you went down to Panama, right? That's where it was at?
Panama City Beach.
Yeah, Panama. Yeah, so go ahead and give everybody a little summary of why you went there and how you got there. Yeah. What made you guys drive down here to go see to there?
Yeah, totally. So this is back in 2013, you know, I'm young Australian, just looking to have a good time. Got a couple of weeks off at university, and me and all my mates, we decided, you know, we would go and experience what this whole spring break phenomena is like down in Florida. And we had done a spring break in Milwaukee before, which was fun, and we had a good time. But we were like, let's go to the real deal. Let's go to the big party, you know. We're just like college students looking to have a really good time. And so we all like got our money together, hired a car, and decided we'll go down for a week trip, a bit of a road trip, 16-hour drive from Milwaukee all the way down to Florida. And yeah, it was cool because I was with a lot of my really close university friends who primarily were from England. And we were just looking to have a good time, you know, see what this spring break thing's all about and go and have a bit of a party. And in Australia, we have something similar once we finish high school. We call it Schoolies, which is essentially a big celebration for graduating. And I had a thought in my mind, you know, it would be something similar to this kind of concept. And so we got there and I was completely blown away, you know, like 20,000 people all partying on the beach. It was just wild. And we were, at that time, we were just like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, this is every college boy's dream, you know, like plenty of good looking girls, plenty of drinking and drugs and plenty of partying. This is like amazing. We were soaking it up, and instantly we were just like, yeah, getting into the vibes and out to all the nightclubs, drinking loads. And yeah, we were really enjoying ourselves. And it was about day three where we came into, like, we crossed paths just by synchro destiny with this film crew who just happened to stop us in our tracks as we were going to the cellar party. We were just hanging out by the pool and having a few drinks. And they asked us, like, oh, do you mind if we interview you guys? Is that cool? Like, we just have a couple of questions to ask about what's going on here. And so we kind of stopped, and they started asking us some questions about sex and about what we're doing and how spring break is for us. And we were loving it. We were just soaking it up, and we were giving each other so much banter. We were just bouncing off one another. And they kind of really liked that about us, that we had this kind of camaraderie within the group, and we had an ability to kind of take the piss out of each other and just like accept it and forget about it. Cause that's what we did naturally anyway. We would always kind of like pick on each other in a sense that we would keep each other in check, but just have a laugh with it, you know? And they kind of liked that. And so they kept on filming us, and they wanted to follow us around, and they were like, oh, do you mind if we come to the party tonight? And we're like, yeah, come on, we'll show you what it's like, what spring break's all about. And then next thing you know, we had this whole film crew with their cameras, their light men, the sound guys, all of the little ladies who were like getting everyone to sign consent forms, and da 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 da. This whole crew following us around and getting us into, you know, the nightclubs. We were skipping all the queues. They would pay for our entry. We'd buy us drinks all night, and we were just
You guys sign a consent form.
Yeah, everyone signed a media release. Yep.
But yeah, but I thought at that time the people that was recording you, they weren't that big at that time, or they.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were really small. Yeah, actually,
that's why I'm surprised, because usually big companies do that.
If production companies want to sell it though to anybody like a network, they have to get consent forms. So then they got to go hunting everybody down, so that way they sign it.
That wasn't the goal at that time though. The goal was they were just recording it. They didn't know they were going to sell it to Netflix till like later on. Because I'm pretty sure they reached out to him, Shay, like 5 years later. You said something like that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Steven got to reach out to you. At least they found you though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was super fortunate. We were able to stay in contact. And at the time, you're right. Like I was kind of looking at these guys and I was like, yeah, there's no way that they're going to release a documentary on Netflix. Let's just go and have a good time and see where it takes us. You know, we weren't thinking about what's coming down the line, but, so we did.
At least it was authentic though.
Yeah, it really was.
Because if you knew that it was going to be on Netflix, you probably would not say certain things that you said.
Absolutely.
Or do certain things that you did. Yeah. Because you thought, because your head, you're like, man, this is not going to air nowhere. This is going to stay between us.
Yeah, exactly. And that was always the plan. Like, we were always, between us guys who were filmed, we were like, yeah, we won't tell anyone about this. Yeah, it was filmed, but it's not going to come out. And it didn't for ages, and we kind of completely forgot about it for a while until 2018 came, and then we were quickly reminded about that experience.
Were you scared to watch it, or did they let you watch before it came on?
Before they released it, yeah, they were really kind enough to show us a version that wasn't the final draft, but it was kind of coming to completion. And just they were also really, really kind to like give us a pre-warning of what we can expect. So that was our opportunity to watch the film before it was released. And at that point, you know, I was just like, oh my God, what have I done?
You know, it's crazy, man. It was crazy because you made me give it like that. That documentary let me see a different point of view of things, of life, and how the culture we're in, like, sex sells now. Like, sex is almost everything, like, what's going on in our culture. And I seen in the documentary how they said how you got Kim Kardashian got famous off of the sex tape. And it's crazy if you think about it, like, damn. Yeah. We're here lusting for, like, especially little boys. Like, can you, that, like, that Panama City, like, if you was to tell me, like, that was going to be there, like, when I graduated high school or when I was in high school, I would have drove out there, too. Yeah. I would have been doing the same thing Shay was doing, and I probably would have done the documentary, and I would probably would have been worse. It's crazy how our culture and our generation, and I seen that, I forgot where I heard you say this, but, like, there's not a lot of role models for men where men can go to and, like, talk to about certain things. Like, it's just us figuring out on our own.
Yeah, you're totally right, man. It's so easy to just get swifted away in that culture that, you know, is kind of really hypersexualized in a lot of senses through media, like through our screens and things that we're watching, even the billboards. Like, the message of the film is quite powerful, you know, because they find the connecting thread from obviously the beginning stages of like just hooking up, you know, having that kissing and one night stands, and where does that lead to? You know, that leads to this idea that, you know, potentially that all of this coercion and this entitlement of males' point of view from, okay, let's strip it back. It essentially, it's coming from the media that we're watching. We're watching on our screens, the, like you said, this idea that sex sells, advertisements of women in bikini or men having to be this proud guy with all of these girls around them. And it's so obvious in our culture and in the West primarily. Even in Australia, I've noticed it in a lot of places in England and Europe and a lot in America when I was there. And the role of pornography as another media source and how it encourages, accepts, and even celebrates this hypersexualized, not just behaviors, but ways of being in the world. You know, so for me to be a really masculine man, I've got to have this really strong physique, body. And if I've got two girls around my arms, yeah, I'm even more of a man. And
yeah, you considered the man. That's how my mind of thinking was when I was in high school. How much girls you can knock down? You got a list. You got a team. A strong physique, or like how famous are you in school? Like, it's crazy how we thought that makes you a man. That makes you a man.
Exactly. You're totally right, man. It's really quite confusing time coming of age because, I mean, for me, I was taught so much to learn about myself from my external world, and the external world is telling me all of these messages about how to be a man, to not be a faggot and not be a pussy and not be like this wimpy little girl, but be a man, you know, sleep with all the chicks, be a player, go out and do all this stuff.
If you're not doing that, they think you're something wrong with you, you're gay or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's your point of view, Lisa, since you're a girl? And they actually show a point of view. I like that part in the documentary where they showed the guy's point of view first and then the girl's point of view. What's your point of view? I don't know if you watched it, Lisa.
No, I did watch it. I don't know. I was the girl that had one guy that I dated in high school, and I waited till I was like a sophomore before I even kissed the guy, you know, or like lost my virginity or anything. But it was to that one person, you know what I mean? Like, and I didn't go on like a host spree. I had friends that did, you know, that they hooked up with guys all the time. You know, you would hear about things happening behind the portables or, you know, behind the building or the staircase or, you know, whatever, but like, I don't know. I didn't hang around. Like, I went to school of the arts too. So I feel like it was different in public school than it was in school of the arts, because we all had like common interests. We all had goals. We all had things that we were like really structured about. The difference was we weren't forced to go there or be there. We all auditioned to be there. So none of us, at least when my generation, I know like younger kids, like once I was in eighth grade, the sixth graders were like way ahead of us with like belly button rings and like all these things that I did not even like have then and whatever. But I wasn't surrounded by that, but I did have like friends outside of school that were like that. And I don't know, I think it is who you are, who you associate yourself with, because, you know, and I think it's also what you, like, my mom was in the Army, so she was super strict. Like, I couldn't watch MTV or BET, or, like, I would be sneaking it, you know, to find out what the music video looked like and stuff like that. So, you know, I definitely got, like, the strict end, and I didn't super rebel in that sense. Did I, like, sneak out to go to, like, you know, prom parties and stuff like that?
I was just about to ask you that.
But, yeah, of course. I stole my parents' car.
Usually when you strict with a girl... Yeah.
But I did plenty of rebelling. It just wasn't sexual rebelling, you know, but there were people doing that. But it's true. Like, you guys, it is kind of like a number count. I remember like the whole papers where you had who was the hottest girl in school, and like girls wanted to be on that list. So it was like the shorter your shorts were, the shorter the tops were, you know, the lower they were. It was like, oh, you got attention. You were popular. You were a cheerleader. You know, the cheerleaders wore the extra short spanks, you know. So, no, I definitely saw both sides of it. I personally didn't find the guy who was hooking up with 20 girls the hot guy. I thought that was the nasty guy. But that is also my personal opinion. But I had friends that would go after the popular nasty guy because, you know, they wanted to. And I was a cheerleader. I was around that and in the group. It just wasn't my personal forte. And I also, like I said, I dated somebody through high school, so it wasn't really like my thing, you know. But I mean, to each his own. And you guys, I mean, it is what it is. You guys, it is the generation. I do think that there is a point though where it is common sense, to be honest. If like there's guys and there is a girl like being taken advantage of or whatever the case is, where, you know, I don't think it's something to boast and brag about. I think it's something that, even though it is just a hookup or a fuck buddy or, you know, a one night stand, it's just keep your mouth shut. You know what I mean? Just like, keep it to yourself. They keep it to yourself. You guys high five later. But I think like the whole laughing and the whole joking thing, or like the high five, like that guys do, that I have seen, you know, at like parties, and especially the younger these kids get, it's like, it's not really cool when you do it in front of them, because that doesn't make them feel any better about themselves. So in a sense, like, the girl goes home and she feels like shit, rather than like, okay, or, you know, it's between us kind of thing, you know, because you guys do have a number and a rapport that you try to keep up with, you know, or one another, or your friends, or whatever the case is. So, no, I mean, I don't know, I wasn't that girl, but I definitely did have friends that were those girls. And they would get upset and they would cry and they'd be like, why did I do that? Or, you know, they'd feel pressured. And I remember going, there was a, what is it, Island Jacks or something over here in West Palm, that like they used to have like a hot body contest, and the girls would get on the bars and get naked. And you would have girls that would get like completely naked. They would spray them with water on like the little bar thing, whatever it was, the little hose, you know. So, you know, I don't know. And I would watch. I'm not going to lie. Like, we're all at the bar watching, you know what I mean? They're on the bar. Where else are you going to go? But it's not, I wasn't on the bar. I think I did get on a bar though a few times, though. I'm not going to lie. I just didn't get naked. You know what I mean? I mean, it is what it is. You have fun, but I don't think you have to like necessarily be sexual while having fun. Cause I definitely did have my fun. I'm not going to lie. Like, I did dance on bars and stuff, just not that way.
Clark, you're pretty quiet over there, man. When you was at a magnet school or something?
No, I went to a magnet school in elementary school. But, no, I mean, like, the school I went to, both sides, like, everybody was active in middle school, man. Like, I'm talking about kids were, they were having kids in middle school, man. Like, wow. It's hypersexual. Like, you see people in the middle of class, they're like, you'll see the girl sitting on the guy's lap during class.
I do remember just talking on this subject, like, it's me and you, when I was in, we call it grade 8, so stepping into high school. And I was about 13 years old, and I was a bit of a later developer. So what I noticed at this time was a lot of my friends around me were developing quite quickly and maturing fast. And at that age, you know, 13-year-old boys and girls are kind of physically going through changes where I notice men's voices are getting deeper, their balls are dropping, you know, their hormones are changing, stepping into a more mature person. And I remember sitting around the lunch table and kind of one of my friends came up to me and he started this whole conversation about kind of telling us how we had sex on the weekend with this chick. And I remember sitting there thinking about it and everyone was like so amazed and they're opening their eyes and like, oh my God, like kind of curious, like, tell me more about this, like sex. Like, I really want to know more about it because we're 13-year-old kids, you know, like it's not a conversation. We haven't even had sex education class yet, or I'm talking to my mum and dad about this topic. But as soon as my friends had experience, I want to know more. And I'm curious now. And like, I'm this young boy. I haven't even grown any, like barely any pubic hairs yet. And I'm kind of looking down there and I'm thinking, this guy's already having sex, you know? And like, does that mean like, am I supposed to be doing that too? Or like, what's going on? And suddenly, like in my mind, and I'm just like, have this curiosity. Like, I just want to know more about it. And I've already obviously got some understanding that it's sex that makes babies and all of these things, but I've got no personal experience into what it entails and the pleasure that it can bring and like all of these things and what it really means. And so it's like instantly as a 13-year-old boy, I want to know more. And I don't really have the deeper understanding on like how to ask the questions to people who could offer me some answers or like how to navigate that kind of conversation. So it's like instantly I just jump on my dial up internet. It's like, connects through and, you know, I'm like hooked into the internet now and it's like starting to find this like pornographic imagery of like sex and what that is and trying to understand it a little bit more. And it's an industry that's completely unregulated and it's totally free and accessible to anyone, anywhere, anytime. And it's like, obviously the message that pornography kind of tells and in a broad sense, obviously not everything, but in a lot of the porn that I see that's on the internet, it's male dominant and it's all about the male's pleasure. And it's about the female doing whatever she can to make him like come to his climax. And sometimes it gets even brutally worse where it's like this triple, double, like quadruple penetration on this poor girl. And it's very, quite violent sometimes. And for a young 13-year-old boy who's trying to understand about sex, getting these messages downloaded from the internet about how a relationship in its intimate level like plays out, it becomes very destructive. And it's easy to see how that narrative plays out through the culture and the way that men and women relate to one another in an intimate environment in the bedroom or even in at a college party, you know, where the film leads to is this horrible, horrible story of this poor girl who was literally raped on the beach in broad daylight in front of 20,000 people. And it's really quite scary. And that's obviously the worst possible outcome of something like this. But again, initially it starts with, you know, the very beginning point, like what kind of conversations are we having around these topics? Like how do we educate the younger generations around the way that they feel around sex or intimacy and connecting with others? And so that's why it's really cool to have this conversation with you guys and to hear your stories and perspectives and ways that we can support one another and the next generation to come through to understand their role within their own community or school, you know? So I'm curious to hear more from you guys too.
I think there needs to be more role model. I think women, we do have enough. We have the Me Too movement. You know, we do have a lot of things that go on. I don't think you guys do. And I think that'd be something that someone should incorporate and maybe doing, just because, like, you know, like I recently just saw there's a guy on YouTube, like a dad, and he made a whole YouTube channel dedicated to kids who don't have dads and showing you how to do things that fathers would normally teach you how to do, you know, like changing a tire or stuff like that, just for women and men as well who don't have dads, you know. So I think definitely having somebody to incorporate that, maybe to just kind of shed light on, you know, their experiences, or, you know, just to kind of give you a little guidance or something, you know what I mean? I just feel like you guys, I do think guys also deal with like the whole sexual abuse and stuff like that also. And I think that gets swept under the rug. I don't think that it's just women that are victims of that. So I think that you guys feel more embarrassed about talking about it than we do. Because we're trying to get our message across that we're women and we empower one another and we feel like we have to say it. I think with, you know, men, you guys feel more like you're, you know, demeaned because of it. And, you know, it doesn't, you're not, you don't amount to enough if you say something, or you're in what you said, like a pussy or whatever. Like, so I think, you know, there needs to be, you know, some sort of, you know, light shed onto that and somebody to give a little bit more guidance and people to kind of come out more with, you know, the same thing, you know, like you're a young kid, you don't know. And honestly, like I'm really open with my son. So I've had the talk, I've walked in on it, I walk back out, you know, like it is what it is. You're a 14-year-old kid, you know what I mean? But I definitely have had the talk. I definitely make sure like we are very open with one another. Like, you have ideas, you got a girlfriend, like, okay, you're going to her house, all right, door stays open, you know, things like that. But I'm not going to sit there and also be oblivious to the fact that, like, there's thoughts and there's, you know, questions and whatever. Like, you're a kid, it is what it is. We live in a world where social media and phones and kids aren't always, like, monitored, and, you know, parents don't always look at their kids' phones either, so you don't know what the friends are sending, because sometimes it's not even your kid, you know, it's who they're hanging out with and, you know, what they have that they're exposed to and what their parents allow and don't allow. And then, you know, they bring that to your children, or, you know, you're a friend of somebody. And I had plenty of friends where their parents would let them do whatever they wanted to do. You know what I mean? I would go over and they'd say, okay, sure, go wherever. And I wouldn't even know that their parents were home half the time that we were there. And we're maybe like 12, 13 years old, same thing, you know? So I definitely learned plenty of stuff, actually most of it from my friends and my peers, not from, you know, my parents. I just had really strict parents that I didn't have the balls to try shit. So that's really what it came down to. But
I got,
you know,
a couple things to say to that too. So I do see that social media and like TV, certain TV shows is corrupting people's mind and relationships too. Like Love and Hip Hop and shows like that, and social media, for some reason, I don't want to sound like, I don't know, my experience is with females, and for some reason, females tend to, oh, they doing that, so why can't you do this too? Or try to compare your relationship to someone else's relationship, and see, certain girls see how that man is acting on TV, so they want you to act that way too. And I feel like those TV shows and things like that, social media, is corrupting and polluting our minds. Because I can say that for men, too. Men probably do the same thing watching that, too. Go ahead, Clark.
Oh, no, I didn't want to interrupt. But, yeah, that's definitely, like, as far as with that, like, with the relationships and, like, sexual and so forth, I feel like everybody feels like everyone else is expendable when it comes to that. Like, oh, you're not going to do this? I can go somewhere else and do that. Or, you know,
there's plenty other fishes in the sea.
So.
There's plenty other fishes in the seas. That's what they usually say.
That's what they keep saying. Yeah. And that's like exactly what you said, Rose. Like, that's what's portrayed out there. And as far as with the, you know, sexual activity and so forth with kids, it's better that, like you said, Lisa, like to be open, because like Shay said, it's very accessible and it's free, and the kids will see that and they get a certain perception where certain things are okay. Like, you know, like as far as like sexual abuse, the kid may think it's okay at that age, they're not realizing that that's just acting, and they act upon it when they get older, and it's just, it gets crazy at that point. Now it turns into something else. So yeah, there's a lot going on.
And let's be real too. Let's be real though. Like us as guys, we're competitive. Like, can you imagine you coming to me or I'm coming to you and be like, hey, I need help in the bedroom or something like that, or give me some tips or anything like that. Best believe it, women are talking about that more than guys, giving each other help or tips and like that. Us as men, we won't have that conversation because we feel embarrassed and we feel like our honor, like we feel like we're supposed to be the man. We're not supposed to be going to another man and asking man for questions like that. But best believe it, the girl's mom teaching the daughter that something, or the girl's talking to her friends about it and they're learning something sexual about sex. But while us, we're not having that conversation, we're not being open about it.
Because you guys would rather look at magazines than Google.
Yeah.
That's the problem with us men. We need to be more sexually educated.
You know what's so crazy?
No, you need to be more willing to educate yourself on it. That's what it is. You guys have to realize there's so many resources these days that like kids in this generation really have no excuse. Like, you have all the resources in the world, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as, like, what your perception is, like I said, it is who you hang out with and what you're associated with. But I think as far as that, like, use Google. We use Google for everything these days, you know? I know my kids use Google for everything. They Google how to buy outfits. You know, so I think, you know, you have to, I don't know, educate yourself. I'm always Googling, reading, ask questions. I don't know why you guys shouldn't like ask each other questions. I don't know what's weird about it. You guys can talk about like pounding it in and stuff, but you can't talk about like what suggestions.
That is crazy. We could talk about knocking her down, but we can't talk about like if we didn't do something right or we want to learn something for some reason.
Yeah,
we can't
have that conversation. Saying, like, I mean, I'm sure there's like a minute moment. You guys have to have that once in your lifetime. So it's like you can't ask anybody or talk to anybody.
Like, they don't want
to
admit that.
No,
they don't want to admit that.
Never that.
Not me.
Why?
I do it for 3 hours. You don't have that.
Yeah, right. But Shay. So like, I don't know how the culture is over there in Australia, but like you said, it's culture shock over here. So the thing is, as far as with what Rosé was saying and going to another guy, like, you're not going to do that. I'm sure it kind of will be the same thing over there. So to me, I don't know how it is in Australia, but over here, a lot of, you know, you get a lot of people cheating, going behind their people's back and so forth. To me, I want to ask you how you feel about this, but to me, if a guy asks another guy how to do certain things in the bedroom and they know that person has a girlfriend, right? So they're going to be like, man, his girl is not being satisfied. Maybe not. You know what I'm saying?
So he's going to go.
See, that's just you guys being conniving.
No, I'm
competitive.
Just
it's the competitive in the guy.
I think crazy like that. I'm sorry. I think.
No, you're right. You're right. No, but some guys would do that. Some guys would do it. You're right.
Exactly. Because I've seen stuff like that. I never did anything. But how is it in Australia when it comes to that? Are people more open like that? Or are people more... like, you know what I'm saying? How is it?
Yeah,
like
that's a really good, that's a great question, man. And it's good insight. My experience is like the friendships that I have with my male friends, I would never do something like that. But it seems that the conversation around sex isn't that kind of open, or we don't go to those vulnerable depths about the way that we are really feeling and how it makes us feel. Like, just from my experience, it's easy to talk about, you know, yeah, she's great in bed, but not share the deeper insights into what makes it really good. Or even like, if it's not going good, yeah, it's hard to say to your friends, I've had this girlfriend for 5 years, but we haven't had sex in two. Like, there's no chemistry there, or there's no like harmonizing bond. It's really difficult for a male, I find, even for myself, to openly admit to ultimately the flaws and the kind of vulnerable sense of humility to share that, well, I don't have it all worked out. I'm not perfect and things aren't going good. And just openly admitting that is probably the biggest challenge for for myself ultimately, and for a lot of men that I notice. And that's maybe what's limiting us to having these deeper conversations about what's happening in the bedroom, or what's, you know, what's really going on inside of our, in our, in our minds and our hearts. So yeah,
that goes both ways too, though. Girls are like that too.
Yeah. Girls are like, that's very true. Yep.
Oh yeah, women are that way all the time. They also sit there and they'll pretend like they'll send girls to go call your guy, you know, and hook up with him just to be conniving behind your back. It happens all the time. They're really, really grimy.
Yeah.
Ladies, I'll give you a little bit more background to the film as well. Leading up to that spring break trip, going down to where, when Liberated was filmed, just prior to that, I had made a couple of mistakes with my girlfriend who was from America, and I ended up hooking up with an ex-girlfriend, and that brought our relationship to, you know, a little bit of a bitter and sour end, which is, completely my fault. And I had messed up and made the mistake of, you know, getting led astray, essentially not being loyal to my partner. And so that caused this ricochet of, you know, wild emotions out of this woman who I hurt, you know, and she then attempted to get back at me and make me feel, you know, that same level of hurt that she was feeling from my actions. And so she went out to kind of manipulate and hook up and get with all of my closest teammates and my friends who were essentially my family over there, because I had left everything behind in Australia. And the people that I was closest to were those guys in my sports team, and those guys that that I was surrounded with on a daily basis, who I was open with, and I shared a lot of things with. And so then I got caught wind of like this, all of this stuff that was happening between my best friends and my now ex-girlfriend. And suddenly I'm like confused as to what's going on and feeling this like really deep level of hurt and betrayal, and kind of at that point in my life, just like throwing everything up in the air and going, you know what, to hell with it. Like, I'm going to go out and sleep with as many people as I can too. And I'm just going to go out and, you know, sleep with all the girls and try and boost my esteem back up to prove, you know, yeah, like I'm something. I'm a man. And
well, see, and I think that's where we all mess up, because then you've got that one girl that does that, and then you guys are like traumatized for the rest of your like next couple of years.
Yeah, but it was totally my fault. Like if I hadn't made the mistake initially, like I've got myself to blame ultimately.
Right.
I guess I didn't really, where I'm leading with this is that I didn't have the tools at the time to be able to navigate these lusting sexual desires that I had, that I ended up fulfilling, which had been kind of, you know, programmed into me from my teenage years, where I was consistently watching pornography online, where it was, you know, I would self-pleasure and masturbate to some of these images that I'm seeing in pornography, and getting these kind of concepts around the way that men and women relate. And where I'm going with this is that the production crew from Liberated, the Magic Lantern production team pictures, they're bringing out a second Liberated, which goes a little bit more in depthly into the porn industry and the role that that plays in our culture. And it's super interesting. We filmed when we were doing the screening of Liberated, and there'll be elements of like a follow-up kind of thing with some of the cast from the show. And they also go a little bit deeper into the role of pornography, and they explore with neuroscientists how there are certain kind of neurological pathways that have been rewired when ultimately you're coming to your climax, when you're watching something on the screen, that you're suddenly having to get that dopamine hit, and you want to do it more again and again and again. It becomes very addictive. Like, you're going for that next, you know, next more crazy thing, the next intense, and suddenly the things that you were watching initially are not fulfilling the lusting desires of what you're craving now. And so it like takes you on this pathway where suddenly things become very more physical, a lot more aggressive, a lot more you know, destructive in a sense. And to get to that same level, like after it becomes such an addictive quality, actually to be able to climax and ejaculate, you have to, you know, go to these extreme lengths, which has been kind of put into our minds that we have to do to be able to seek pleasure. And so just by understanding the role of our relationship to where we seek pleasure, whether it's self-pleasuring or pleasuring with another person, you know, the role of sex has many, many different purposes, not just pleasure. Obviously, fundamentally, it's for us to procreate as humans, you know, we all came here from a sexual experience. And for me, that's why it's so weird that this whole topic of sex is kind of quite taboo in our modern society. And it seems, I've been reading this great book I highly recommend to a lot of people. It's called The Sex at Dawn, and it talks about the prehistory of sexuality. And it looks at not just heterosexual relationships, because they prove that in humans and in animals, homosexuality is quite common. You know, same-sex kind of partnerships is very common, in fact. But they look at, you know, this kind of story of monogamy that we've institutionalized and become a part of. And it's super interesting because they go right back to when we were living in, you know, our primal times, sitting around campfires, and the way that we would build resilience in our communities by sharing these stories about how we can, you know, ultimately help one another survive at that time and also grow and become better people so that we can live harmoniously together. And that seemingly small group that would maybe be a couple hundred people in a tribe has become a couple million people in a country, you know? And it seems very difficult to navigate a whole conversation within a country. But I think what's really empowering is these conversations that bring it back to a localized level, a kind of more individual level, to look at how we can grow together. And one of the things that when I do my research on these ancient cultures that still exist today, you know, there are in Australia a lot of Aboriginal people, as an example, who are living in these more traditional ways. And even across the world, I've traveled to places in Asia and the Pacific and Vanuatu, which are very traditional in their culture. And one thing that I noticed that is prevalent in these indigenous cultures is this rites of passage or initiation that they have for young boys becoming young men. And I totally acknowledge that there is certainly a place for this for women. However, as a man that I am, I feel that it's not my business to talk about women's business. And in itself, it would be a totally whole nother conversation. I've been fortunate to grow up with two sisters who I've been able to observe and witness their own process and journey on this. But just in this conversation to focus on young men, what I notice in our culture at large is that we don't really have a kind of environment or a place for this celebration of when a boy becomes a man, you know, this rite of passage where it goes on this journey. And even in the Aboriginal culture, they talk about going on walkabout, where the young boy has to go out to, is separated from their community, go, and this is the same kind of process for all cultures, where they go through, the young boy goes through some tribulations, some trials. Sometimes it's going through intense pain of tattooing, some like experience that transforms them to be able to overcome these hurdles in life that life is going to throw at all of us, to push through the extreme adversity and actually come out the other side, not just survive it, but come out with more tools, more knowledge, more wisdom. And then to be a man, whether it's to survive in the outback when you're on walkabout, to having to hunt your own food, find your own water, build your own shelter, and then to come back into the community, to come back to your place of comfort that you grew up in as a boy, but come back as a man and be celebrated by the community for the transformational process that they've been on this whole journey, and coming back to actually not just be a participant of the community, but actually to come back and serve the community as a man now, and looking at what that entitles. And what I notice in my experience as a young boy in Australia and also experience in the United States is that this whole idea of a rite of passage or a coming of age kind of experience is absent. And even in today, you know, I'm 27 years old now, and I go into town and I'll go to the bar and whatever, and I'll still see, you know, like men, well, actually boys in men's bodies. And mentally, right. You know, like, and that's what I was. I was this 21-year-old young boy thinking I'm something that I'm really, that I'm not, and playing into this whole egotistical, self-absorbed mentality that is very much the psychology and the mindset of a young boy, you know, where it's all about me, 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 look at me, and trying to look for validation, essentially, rather. And so I guess where I'm going with this is like a really nice question of how we can move forward and integrate these really nice kind of settings and environments, or what that could potentially look like to help young boys transition into that manhood kind of mindset and mentality and lifestyle.
For sure.
Yeah, I agree. I actually want to touch on what Lisa said earlier too. I don't think you guys, well, I don't think women understand the power of words. Like, remember you was telling me how, Shay was talking about how his girlfriend was trying to, our ex-girlfriend was trying to talk to her friends to get back at him, and how after that you were hurt and you felt like you needed to go knock down as much as girls you want to. I've been through that phase in my life too at one point where I was so hurt that I was like, the only way to fix this to me go knock down a whole bunch of girls, and it didn't solve anything. It just, I just felt like, damn, I'm still hurt at the end of the day. And men have fragile egos. So when a girl attacks our ego or do something like that, it hurts us. So that's what men probably don't want to admit, like, it, but I'm admitting.
I feel like you guys go off of that.
What do you mean?
Like, you guys go off of your ego, you know? Your actions, your reactions, everything's based on an ego.
I think there should be a balance to it. Any guy that thinks he thinks high of himself is going to have some type of ego. But when you're a young boy, sometimes you feel like you're the shit, like you're everything. Nobody can stop you. You're on top of the world. And sometimes that can take you over the hill.
Yeah, Rosé, why are you muting the background?
What's crazy is that I never really had an ego like that, man. Like, I just never really, I don't know, trying to go out and trying to talk to chicks. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I do, of course, I went out there.
I think it's a confidence thing, too. I think you guys have to, like, you are who you associate yourself with. So you're with a crew that's, like, mad, you know, into themselves, and they're really confident, and they know that they've got it going on or whatever. I feel like you're kind of going to ride that, too. You know, you vibe off of one another.
I was around that, though. But go ahead.
Then what happened? No, I'm just kidding.
Not like that. I've never been like that. I just don't know what it is. I've never been like that. But just, I always ended up with a chick, though. Because, I mean, I always ended up around or ever ended up being with a chick because, I mean, I was different. I mean, that's just me. I'm not going to go out there and be like, yeah.
Do
like,
you guys find no, yourself but doing you, this still?
No, but Clark, your ego don't have to be just about girls. It could be about anything in life. Like when you play sports, you think you're better than that person when you're playing against them in sports.
Or that. Well, I mean, in this moment right now, yeah, of course. But yeah, if it comes to cars and stuff, yeah, then yeah, I'm on that.
Yeah, see.
Yeah, you have an ego. You know. Don't act like you don't have an ego.
Cars and stuff like that. Yeah, don't. But yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, definitely. But it went into like.
But you don't find yourself doing that now, though, because you guys matured.
It comes with experience. Sadly, that it comes. Sometimes it comes in expense where that girl can be the right person for you, but you lost her because of, like, if you would have knew what you knew now, you probably, maybe she was the perfect girl for you. I don't know. Sometimes you run into that, or the guy too, because sometimes things happen with. Well, I don't know. Shay could probably give us more details into that.
You guys are right. Like, it's our life experiences that lead us to who we are and where we go from here. Like, I think for me, it's the only way to really grow as an individual and as a person is to, you know, go through these series of trials and tests and these experiences with different women and going through breakups and going through the hard times and coming out the other side to live to tell the tale, which is in its own sense a rite of passage. You know, when these people go out into the bush, they come back with this wisdom through their experience, whether it's through a heartbreak, you know, or whether it's through going out and surviving in the bush. Essentially, they're similar things where we go through this, you know, moment of pain and suffering and then are able to come out the other side to live to tell the tale, but also live to learn from the experience so that we don't repeat it again. And it's something that I notice, like, and I think about like how potent these intentional rites of passage could be for young men. And I think, why didn't my dad never do this for me? And it could have really helped me in my life. I maybe never had to go through all of those things that I did. And I think about it and I was like, well, my dad never had a dad. Like, he was doing the best that he could with what he knew, and he was an amazing father.
Yeah, well, I think our parents all make it a little awkward for you to have the conversation.
My parents try to hide it from me for the longest.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I've noticed that. Like, that's why I'm make sure to be so open, just because I realize, like, I think that's where the whole problem stems from, you know, is the fact that they're so sheltered and don't want us to, like, know anything. So I find that they don't tell you, they don't explain it. So then you experiment. It's the same thing with, like, I know so many, like, little kids that'll smoke cigarettes and stuff, you know, their parents never taught them anything. They never talked about it. Even some of them that don't even do it, you know, their kids just saw someone doing it, so they picked it up. So, you know, I definitely think it has a lot to do with, like, your upbringing and your parents. Cause I know my mom didn't ever talk about it ever. Like, everything I learned was through everybody else.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it doesn't make you better or worse, but I definitely think that at least in my generation, my parents were not about telling me or explaining it to me or even, like, entertaining the idea of, like, any thongs in a music video. So, like, that, no. So, I definitely, that's why I make sure not to do that. So, yeah, I definitely think it has to do with that.
Were you, was your dad, like, the type of dad that, like, he worked a lot, so you didn't really spend time with him a lot?
Yeah, no, I was really fortunate growing up. Like, my dad was really good with us kids, and he was really good with me, particularly as I was the only son that he had. And he did work. He worked really hard. Like, he's got an amazing business that he's had for 30 years, and he worked really hard. And he would always be sure to make time to do just father-son things. Like, when I was 7 years old, an example, we went trekking through the Himalayas in Nepal. And when I was 14, we went up to Japan and went on a snowboarding trip, just father and son, you know, which are really potent times. But what I noticed was that what was going through my mind as a child, as a young boy, was that what I needed to do, the story that I told myself was that what I needed to do in order to get love from my dad was to perform, to do things like really well in sports, to, you know, climb the highest mountain, to be really good at snowboarding. And I would feel this level of acceptance from my father that he loves me, you know? And so I lived a lot of my life with this subconscious story and this subconscious mentality that I had to perform in order to receive love from a fatherly figure or role model. And so when that played out in terms of relationships and sexuality, it's evident to see in Liberated, you know, I was performing at a high level sexually with a lot of women in order to get that acceptance from male peers and male role models. That's what I thought. This is the story that's playing out in my mind, you know, that I'm thinking I'm gonna be something, I'm gonna be accepted. Because ultimately all young boys are just looking up to their father figures and wanting their mothers, you know, wanting to be accepted and wanting to be loved and supported. And another element to that is that I also felt that I wasn't necessarily being taught the emotional understanding of how to navigate. I was excelling in the physical elements of my life, you know, very good at sports, very good at doing all of these things physically, but emotionally, I didn't really have the intelligence to know how to understand the deeper feelings of you know, upset or hurt that I was experiencing. As an example, a story that I'd share, when I was 13 years old, I remember vividly that I witnessed my father with another woman, and my mum and dad are still married at this point, and I capture him. I catch him in the act of, you know, hooking up with another lady. And it, like, instantly I didn't want to believe it was true. I was like, wow, this can't be happening. You know, like, my mom and dad are great together. What's going on? Why would he ever do this? And so I wanted to investigate it further. And the more that I went down that rabbit hole, I found out, you know, wow, this is actually happening. And after a while, I was super confused. And I can see that my mom is not, you know, there's a bit of pain in the household now. My mom is finding out. And finally, I built up the courage as a young boy. And I'm like, wow, okay, like, I need to talk to my dad about this. I need to tell him about it. And finally, I built up the courage to go up and tell him. And I'm like, hey, dad, like, I seen you with that woman. And at this point, you know, I'm like, it's so much for me that I'm crying now. And I'm trying to tell him what I'm seeing. And I don't know how to navigate this whole conversation because I'm a 13-year-old boy, you know. And he's there, and I'm bawling my eyes out, telling him that I've seen him hooking up with women, and like, basically that I don't want him to do it. And he looks at me and he's like, son, don't tell anyone about this. And for me, suddenly I'm like, I just swallow all of the emotions that I'm experiencing. And from that point on, like, I zip my mouth shut, because he's telling me, he's this hero that I go trekking with, I go hiking with, that this guy that I looked up to, my father, he's like my ultimate idol as a young boy. And he's telling me not to tell anyone about this. It's like, if I tell someone, sure, he's going to reject me. He's going to kick me out of the house. You know, he's going to do all of these things that are going to make my life very difficult. So sure, I'm going to listen to him and do as he says, essentially. And at that point on, you know, subconsciously, I had even told myself that I will never share my truth. Like, I will never really speak what's going on inside me on an emotional level. I will swallow all of these emotions. I will bury them deep down inside of myself out of a fear that, you know, the male figure in my life, my father, is going to reject me if I do. And so I lived my life like that for a long, long time until, you know, it resurfaced 13 years later. And I realized, wow, there's some work to be done here in this relationship that I have to male role models, and primarily my father. And it's like, okay, if it's coming up 13 years down the line and it's still there, it's not resolved. So there's this kind of unresolved emotional trauma that I've been holding on to. How do I resolve this? And so it's unraveled this whole journey of healing and understanding what it means to be a human, you know, and how to resolve this past trauma, essentially. And you know, I'm grateful. Yeah, that I can have the conversation now with my father, you know, in an open and loving way, as men together. And it's been really liberating, actually. So it's really cool.
That's
really
cool. Yeah.
Of course.
I call that the childhood scar or childhood imprint, because there's things that I see my dad that I look at sometimes now, I'll be like, wow, I didn't realize that I was learning or getting some of that negative things. It imprinted on me, and then it went towards my relationship, and I had to like check myself, like, wow, I didn't even realize it.
Mm. Yeah. And I like, that's also, you know, like what Shay said, like there was something that my uncle would say too with females. He's like, oh, never trust them. Never trust them. And he's married too. Right. He's like, never, you know what I'm talking about? It's in the guy community. You know what I'm saying? They said, never trust any female.
Bro,
never,
my old father said that.
Huh?
My old father told me that.
Tell you,
that's okay. My dad told me never to trust men, so he was a cheater too. So
that's the thing. That's what I was gonna get at. Most of the time, when they say that they're with you, and the female or the significant other, the opposite sex or whoever they were with, was cheating on their partner. So that's why I think they said that. You know, and that just, you know, like you said, Shay, it causes a whole ripple effect, and then now you don't trust whoever you're with really at all. Like, you're like, oh, who you texting, who's, you know, this and that and whatever, oh, you dressing up now all of a sudden or whatever, you know what I'm saying, stuff like that. So yeah, it does mess with the whole psyche, and yeah. Definitely goes deep.
Yeah, what do being a man means to you now compared, because yeah, I know, because really, I think I forgot what your answer was in the past in the documentary, but to you, you're a changed man now. So what does it mean to you now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I like that question. And like, I have the privilege today to work with the local charity here in Cairns, where we go to schools. We have a school program set up, and we talk about these subjects with young men who are coming of age and becoming young men in the world. And I get beautiful insight from these young men, you know, who are young 16, 17, 18 year olds. And I get to learn from them and hear these wise insights into what they feel it means to be a man. And some of the things they share, you know, about taking on personal responsibility, you know, caring for the community, looking out for one another, having integrity, being loyal to your loved ones, and being honest and real and open with those in your immediate environment. And it's just so inspiring to have these conversations, because what I realize is that, you know, all of this past emotional unresolved trauma has the potential to be completely healed. And that's the beautiful message, that we can transform all of these, you know, old psyches of that have been passed down to us. And we have the opportunity to kind of break that link in the chain and create a new future. And what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing from these younger generations is a really powerful message, that they are like so in tune with what it means to become a man. And, you know, like, because these conversations are now instantaneously globally connected, more and more people, like Lisa mentioned earlier, the information and the resources are there, and it's becoming filtered into the mainstream, the messages, and people are waking up and realizing the potent potential that we have as human beings to really become true men in the world, or true women, and to come to a place where we are actually giving back and living in service, you know, not going in the world where I was a boy wanting to take, but actually to give and give back and be, you know, a member of the community in a way that is going to actually uplift others rather than bring them down, and come from a place that is not just about me, but it's about what I can do for others and lift them up, because ultimately that's going to lift me up as well. But doing it from a place of service is ultimately what I've come to understand as true manhood.
That's awesome. Do you have a girlfriend now?
Not currently, but I am hanging out with this beautiful woman who I really love spending time with.
And, we're all like,
yeah, it's at the beginning stages, so it's unraveling slowly, which is really nice.
All right. Yay. What about what do sex mean to you now?
Yeah, that's a good question too. I really like that. And sex has been an interesting point of topic as well for me over the last few years, because I realized, you know, as a young boy, I was exploring and understanding myself and what my body functions are doing through sex. And as I've gotten older, it's like it's become about having, you know, seeking pleasure and enjoying another person's body, and again giving, and from what I understand, like in some of the conversations that I've had, as we get older again, you know, like sex can be so much more. It can be about you know, rekindling a kind of deeper connection with a loved one, or like sharing things that words can't explain of how much you care for this person. And, you know, there are a lot of different purposes and meanings, I guess, to sex. But for me right now, what does sex mean to me? I guess on a fundamental level, it's when a male or a female, or male, whatever, like female, come together and they're having this physical experience that actually transcends a deeper emotional experience between the two, that just connects them and bonds them. It's almost like a way of communicating, and like a way to share how much they really care for one another.
I agree. I don't be liking when I hear people say sex, like, I don't like when people make it seem like sex is supposed to be all about the relationship. I feel like that should be like, I don't know, like, how can I explain it more into details? Like I hear girls sometimes say, like, can you be with somebody if the sex is not good?
Are you asking me, or are you telling me what they say?
No, I'm asking everybody. I want to ask everybody first before I get into what I'm trying to say.
I mean, yeah, it is.
No, I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
You don't agree with that, Lisa?
Look, man.
All right, what about
I agree.
It's important, man. Sorry. I'm not saying everything. It's not everything, but it's important, man. You can't just sit there stiff and you waiting like, you know what I'm saying? Nah, it got to be.
All right, what do you think, Sean Shay?
Yeah, man, I like that question. For me, that physical connection has always been really important. And I really enjoy having sex. I went through a season in my life where I was attempting to be celibate for a couple of years and not engage in intimate sexual activities. And what I noticed in that period of my life was that, you know, when I would have these kind of cravings to have sex, and I was like, oh, I really need to have sex right now, you know, what I noticed was that I wasn't actually craving the sex so much, but I was craving intimacy. I was craving connection. And sometimes when I would just be with a woman and I would actually, you know, just like surrender into their arms and they would like massage my head and just like tickle my face or something, that was actually enough. And I was craving more of this, like just intimate connection, just to like, to let go and to be there and be fully present. And that was enough for me to like get over this kind of illusion of a craving that I had for sex. But really it was just to be intimate with someone and to be connected with them. And that's what I was missing. And that would kind of fulfill that, that desire, I guess. So there is a part of me that, yeah, I do value, you know, that physical connection through a sexual activity with a partner. So I don't think it's the be all end all. I think for me, it's more important, obviously, that we're able to connect on an intimate level. And for me, intimacy can be like, you know, singing together or like reading a book together or just sharing experiences ultimately. So,
you just got to where I was trying to get to, because Clark, when you said you need that sex to be good, know that it goes to your head. It's all in your head. So if you have a connection, it makes it even better. Yeah. Anyone can make you bust a nut.
That's true.
Yo, no, but what I'm trying to say is like,
that's what I realized that so far as I'm getting older, it's not about her, how big her butt is or what she's doing in bed. It's not about sex to me no more. It's about a connection with that person now.
Well, I thought you guys were talking about when it actually gets to that, then yeah. But I mean, as far as with that, what Shay said is very true. Like, just to have a woman or whoever that person is that you're interested in, and just talk to them, go out, enjoy each other's time together, and just not even have to do that. You know what I'm saying? So that is very true.
That is connection is where you guys exploring each other's body, exploring each other's mind. It don't have to just be about pounding it. Like, it don't have to be. It don't have to be stuff, like. Man. Yeah, it don't yeah, have I to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I hear people say, "Sex is mandatory, has to be good." Like, how do you think people are getting married before they have sex? So how do you think they were doing things back then? So when I hear that, I don't agree with that no more. Where, I need to test drive the car first and blah blah blah.
Yeah, that's true. Because I know what car I like, man, and I don't care if I don't like it. I'm gonna force myself to like it. So man,
it's in the mind. It's all a mind thing. It's all a mind thing, man.
Because that's how I feel. Like, if it's my favorite car and I get to it, and I'm like, damn. You know what I'm saying? You're like, because I've had that happen. I'm like, damn, man. Yo, I really like this car, like the looks of it, but driving it, it's like, the hell? And me as a car guy, you know, I'm like, bro, I'm going to force myself to like this shit. I'm going to put the seat back, kind of trying to do something, make it feel good. Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like that in a relationship. I try to make that analogy. Like, you kind of, I wouldn't say force yourself, but you get acclimated to it and get used to it. If you really like it, you stick to it and, you know, get to know that person and so forth.
Yeah, and FYI, nobody's perfect. So if You want, if, when girls say that or guys say that, the sex has to be good, that person could be the asshole of your life.
Oh, yeah. And my dad always says that it's chemistry over biology.
Yeah, and he's throwing it down in bed, but that guy, that the nicest person, the best person for you, he's average, but he's not doing whatever. You decide what you want to deal with in your life. It's your life, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yeah. There's somebody for everybody.
Yeah. Go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you, Shay. And we're going to definitely have to do a part two with you. This is an interesting
topic. Yeah, man. Oh, nah. Thank you guys all so much. It's been a really fun conversation, actually. I've really enjoyed myself. I've got a Facebook and Instagram and all the social media stuff that if anyone wants to check it out. It's just Shay Ryan Douglas primarily. At shayryandouglas.com or same on Instagram. It's really funny, actually, because in Liberated, which is on Netflix, anyone can watch it around the world. In the show, they show my Instagram handle, which is _shayman_. And so upon the release of the doco, I've received like all of these messages on a spectrum from like, you're a narcissistic sociopath to like, oh my God, here's some nudes and I love you. When are you coming to my town kind of thing? And everything in between, it's been so radically different, but it's been a huge lesson. And yeah, I'm open to having conversations and chatting and listening to stories. And so thanks so much, guys. I love the work that you guys are doing with the podcast. Keep it up. It's really inspiring. And it can you know, change the world.
Thank you. It's a pleasure having you.
Thanks for coming on, man. It's for the Culture Podcast. Good. For culture.